Mr. Dodd, Reel 3. Now, before we go on, one thing that's just come to your mind is that you were on a commando course during the summer of 41.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do that before we move on with the voyage. How were you selected for this course?
I was selected by, presumably, my company commander. He put me forward, and I think it was a corps effort. There were the NCOs from two divisions, I think. And also, no, there were officers and NCOs. And we went up to a place called Loch Hyatt in Western Scotland, and we went on this commando course. I think it was a month. All sorts of things. Had to blow up a train and derail a train, and we dealt with explosives and all sorts of things. And
how did you find the course?
Well, it was very, very hard, because it was very tough, but I enjoyed it. There was one mountain called Anstack. I've never forgotten this. It was a mountain, but mind you, we were quite high, so we didn't have to go the full 2,000 feet, whatever it was. But every so often, we'd have to go up Anstack, as these instructors said, and they were behind you, and you had to run as best you could. I mean, there were no rock climbing, because it was quite a... I can't remember what I want. The slope was fairly straight all the way up. We had to do that. We did a beach landing on a flat bottomed on one of the islands, and I don't know which island, but and I remember one chap got killed, a man named Swan. I think, funnily enough, he was from one of the DLI battalions. He got in a mountain stream and had a gas cave on for some reason, and he got pulled under and never found Swan. I remember that.
And drowned.
Yes, because he was drowned. And two of the brigadiers came up to have a look at what was going on. But I think it was either a divisional thing or it was a corps thing, you see.
And how tough was it for you? I mean...
Well, I have to say this, that I was fairly fit. And it didn't really... yes, you got tired, but it didn't really affect me too badly. I suppose we were all fairly tough, really, because some were more regular soldiers, you see. And so on, even after that length of time, they were still in the room.
What were the instructors like?
Well, they were quite good. I know Lord Lovett. He was, because I believe he was one of the not the founders, but he was instrumental in the early days of the commanders, I'm sure. He was there. And the officers messed in, I think, the castle, but we were all in sort of barrack rooms in and around the place, and we did all sorts of things. And as a result of that, when I came back, we formed what was called a battle patrol. In other words, I suppose they selected what they thought were suitable candidates, the people who were reasonably fit, I suppose. And we put every platoon in the battalion through this a type of course like this, you see. And I quite enjoyed that. That was quite good.
Were you still in A Company?
No, no. I left A Company to join the battle patrol, you see.
And would that be support company or headquarters company?
The battle patrol was with headquarters company in those days. And Renshaw was the company commander, I'm sure.
Now, by this stage, I know, was Block your...
Yes,
he was your colonel, was he,
yes,
by then?
He came about the time when we went up to Suffolk to Chadacre Park, because I have to say he was a very popular CO.
Why was he so popular?
I don't know. He He brushed aside red tape, I think. And for instance, if anybody, if we'd been on parade, or he wanted to speak to the whole unit, he, at the end, he would just say disperse. And of course, the first time he said, everybody stood still, you see, until we realised what he meant. He was a popular CO. I think very popular, actually. Hmm.
Now, we've got to, you were heading off in this Dutch name.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. No, it's we'll bring you back to that. What was the voyage like? You had cabins as sergeant.
Yeah, we did.
What were the conditions? What were the conditions for the men like?
No, they didn't like it much, because down below decks they all had hammocks, you see, and so on. But I suppose they survived it. There was a lot of gambling used to go on in the ship. I can tell you that. A big gambling spree used to go on.
What game?
Well, a pontoon, or you know that they would have played it.
Not Crown and Anchor, then?
Not a lot. Not a lot. Because I think people realised that they couldn't beat the, you see. But, we went into the North Atlantic, I suppose, to miss the U-boats, but the seas were very, very, very high. And a lot of people, for two or three days, we didn't see many people, particularly in. And of course, we were very fortunate, the NCOs, because we ate in the main dining room before the officers, you see. So the food was jolly good, because it was, the Barneveld was on the South African run, you see. So she was well provisioned. We got to Cape, we called him a free town.
Now, what year, when was this?
It was 1942, August. August 1942, you see.
And you got to Cape Town, you said, sorry?
Yes, we got to Cape Town. By which time, I had been transferred to the mortar platoon. I've just remembered this.
Why was that?
I don't know. I suppose there was promotion, perhaps, and I was still a sergeant.
Had you had any, was the mortar platoon, would they have the 3-inch mortars?
Yes.
Had you had any training on them? Or
only within the battalion. I didn't go away on a course. But they ran a course within the battalion, which I did, you see. And now where was I? We were at Cape Town, yes. And we won the tug of war, the ship's tug of war. You see, the mortar platoon. Now that's come back to me, because there were artillerymen on board, and I think Mr. Gardner, it was quite unusual that you beat the artillery at pulling. You see, anyway, we did. Now we had to go. I was still the baggage sergeant, even though I'd been seconded from the mortars, if you like. Some of our detachment, I think the carriers, had to go, leave the ship at Cape Town, and go up to Aden and Suez. Because we had to get their baggage out. It was quite a job in the hold. The whole of the baggage party, including Peter Daith, we were all in there. We used to come out sweating with them, actually, because it was very, very warm. We had to get all their baggage out, and we went across to Bombay, the ship, and we spent, we disembarked, and the ship spent 3 or 4 days in Colaba Camp, I think it was, Colaba Camp. Just outside Bombay. And then, after about a week, we all went up the Persian Gulf to Basra, and we replaced, I think, the Polish division, who were in northern Iraq, between Baghdad and Mosul, if you will.
Now, when did you realise where you were going, or did you ever know where you
were? We didn't know. We heard a rumour that we were going to Bombay, but there must have been a switch at that time. Now, that was when Montgomery, I think, was developing a ready for October 1942.
El Alamein.
Yes, you see. And for some, because we didn't know what was happening, you see. We just went to Bombay, and I went up on a little stinking French, I've never forgotten this. We went up the Persian Gulf on a little stinking French ship called the Captain Jack. I've never forgotten it. And it was filthy. It was filthy. And there were rats everywhere. Because we could sleep on the up on deck if you could get a place. And there was a professional footballer. Not Tommy. Well, I've forgotten the man's name. But he played for Stoke City. And he always kept the place in the hockey place for you, Sam, which he did. And but he hated these rats. I've never forgotten it because I thought he was going to jump overboard one night. I was really glad he didn't, for the simple reason that the sharks were following the ship all about the Persian Gulf. The great sharks, I suppose, for anything was chucked overboard, you see. Anyway, we got up to Kirkuk was the name of the place, and we stayed there until it must have been about September when we got there.
Now, what was it like at Kirkuk? Because that's well out of the way.
Oh, it is. We were miles out. But I think we'd they had to put a division in there, I think, because they'd moved a Polish division. I think we took a Polish
division. Which was your division and brigade? Sorry, I should know, but
5-6. 5-6 London division and 169 brigade, you see. But the whole division were there, you see. And we were there till about March, I think.
What were you doing at Kirkuk? I mean,
well, we were doing a bit of training and so on. We were doing training, and we were training, and a lot of training because we fired the mortars. I remember up in the hills and so on.
Could you take us through how the? I mean, you may not remember now, but how did the 3-inch mortar work, and what was it like to fire, and the methods of technique?
Well, you had base plate, and the barrel, and a tripod, you see. And you've had 1, 2, and 3 on the mortar, number 1, number 2, number 3, you see, with a sergeant in command of that particular detachment. I think maybe it was 1, 2, 3, and 4. But it was quite a good command, the mortar platoon, for subaltern, because you
That was later when you were commanding it.
Yes. Yeah.
So what did the team numbers do? Well, do you remember now?
Number 1, I think, was the who placed the bomb. Like, there's the you place the bomb. You brought your hands down like this because it only had to drop 3 feet, and it was triggered off by a spigot in the bottom. You see, in other words, as soon as that touched the spigot, then the mortar was released. You see, so that was a drill.
So you smoothed your hands down.
Yes. You got hold of them.
I can tell. They can't see it on the tape anyway, so, yeah.
You got hold of the bomb.
Both sides of it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Now, you were handed. There was a drill, you see, from the number 2, and I think number 2 or number 3 was the layer, because you'd have a sight and you would adjust it if required. So you'd be firing on a line, and he would say, I'm sure now, he would say, ready number 1, and number 2 would give number 1 the bombs, and that would go. I hated the mortars. They were a terrible weapon, I thought, because they could seek you out, you know, they could come up like this, you see, whereas ordinary shelling, you'd be in a...
So you didn't like it, you hated German mortars.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Yes. Oh, very much so, particularly those old devil mortars, you know those.
So, but you thought the British mortar was a good weapon?
Yes. Well, because you could search things out, you see.
How accurate were they, the British ones?
I don't think they were fairly accurate.
What range were they?
I think, from memory, they went up to about 1,700 yards.
So about a mile.
Yeah, about a mile, I think. But I can't remember.
And what would you regard as the range you wanted to be at, you know?
800,000, anything, you see. Because the closer the range, of course, the more perpendicular to the barrel, you see. So that... I can't think what we've can't remember.
What rate of fire could you manage, or would you practice getting a high rate of fire?
You could get, I can't remember now, but you could get quite a number in the air at once. You see, one, two, and, I'm sure. Rapid fire. We had rapid fire. We had three rounds, four rounds. No, I can't remember.
It's okay. And so you were the sergeant with the... Were you the platoon sergeant at the stage? You were just a sergeant.
A sergeant. There were six sergeants and one platoon sergeant.
So you'd be a number one of a gun, would you? Or was the sergeant in charge of the
He was in charge.
So, and then you'd have the team of four or three, whichever it was.
Yes. I know there were one, two and three and possibly four, but I can't. Well, I should know. Damn it. I should know. I would think there were three on the team, I'm sure, plus the sergeant four.
How were the bombs carried? Because
they were in sort of cases, and I think they were six, because they weighed about 10 pounds each, you know. So I think they were sets of three.
And would they be carried? Who would carry them? I mean, or were they brought up by the lorries, or
as far as possible? But you have to carry them by hand, you see. It has to be carried manually, you see.
Because the mortar itself, the plates and the thing weighed 40 odd pounds.
It was damn heavy, you know. Yes. Yes, it did. They were carried. A lot of bombs were carried on the carrier, you see.
Bren carrier.
Yeah, on the Bren carrier. Yes,
and the Bren carrier would carry the mortar bits as well.
As far as it could get, you see. And because of the terrain, if you couldn't get very close, you'd be in problems, really.
So
there'd be a lot of carrier parties, you see.
So this, we'll come back to this when we get to Italy, where I don't think you could get the carriers up in some places.
No, a lot of places.
So we got onto this. So you were training with the mortar. Did you have to learn, as a sergeant, did you have to learn the trajectories and angles and things?
Oh, yes.
Was it fairly simple mathematics?
Yes, I think so.
So what else were you doing at Kirkup?
Well, playing football. We got football pitches out. Well, it was a good idea to keep it occupied, you see. It's an essential thing to keep the troops occupied, so we played football. But then we went across, must have been March, I should think.
What about you were there over the winter? I mean, what was the winter like there? Because it's quite...
Yeah, cold and wet most of the time. But all the tents were dug in to a depth of about 3 feet to give us more. We all dug holes, you see, to make sure the water didn't come in. It made conditions, but we were all sleeping on the ground actually. From about whenever we got there, late October, whenever, to about, I think we must have left February or March, because we left there then.
How about the locals? Did you see much of them?
Yes, they stole everything they possibly could. The Kurds, they were, of course, you see. And the first night we were there, I think they came in and stole... they took the tent away from chaps who were sleeping, believe it or not. Now, you may find that hard to believe, but I'm sure they lost a tent with chaps inside it. I suppose they're pretty tired, these boat chaps, with their long marches. So we always, and we had to sleep with our rifles. Now, you had to sleep with your rifle with the string round your leg. You see, that was a battalion order, you see. You had to sleep because, well, it was a crime, of course, to lose your rifle, you see. Anyway, we went from there.
Was there any trouble while you were there with any of the local population, or was it?
No.
Just petty thieving or grand thieves?
Well, you see, nothing to do, because because almost everywhere was out of bounds, you see. In Kirkuk, it was an oil town. All the roads were made of oil waste, you see, and a bit of a camper. You had to drive very carefully because you could slide off the road if you weren't careful, you see, in wet weather particularly. Anyway, we went from there to we went from Kirkuk across the lava desert.
What was that like, the journey?
Well, we were in three tunnels. We were in three tunnels, and the whole unit moved together in three tunnels, all except for Carrie Platoon, who'd left, I think, for some reason. We were in three tunnels, and we must have gone through Jordan into Palestine, you see. And I think Kantara was the place, El Kantara, and we must have gone into Egypt from there, because we went to a place called Kassa Sin, which is one of the old camps, you know, and we sort of reorganized there for a bit. And then we went up the desert for the final push.
Right, the last stage in of on Tunis.
Yes, and we came in at a place called Enfidaville.
That is very late on.
Yes. Oh, it's almost finished, you see. But I think they wanted to blood the battalion, you see.
Now, it's quite a huge journey. Did you drive, or was you going?
We drove all the way.
What's that like?
And I think it was one of the longest approaches ever into battle, from Kirkuk in Iraq to Tunis. Yes, and there were only two casualties, you see, as well. So they were bloodied in that bit.
What do you remember of Enfidaville? I mean, were you in action there yourself?
Yeah, but I not for very long, because I got a little bit of shrapnel, and I was sent back to Tripoli.
Well, do you remember much about the battle? I mean, could you describe what happened?
Well,
where you set the mortars, you know, what you were doing.
When I was there, the mortars were still on the carriers, and we were a lot of shelling, because they were in defensive positions, you see, and they were able to range, and I think we had quite a few casualties one way or another. But
so you hadn't actually took the mortars off, you were still approaching?
So far as I can remember, yes. And
what happened when you were hit?
Well, I just went to the RAP.
Where were you hit?
I was hit in the chest, certainly. You see, but it bled, my shirt was covered in blood, and an ambulance came up, and I got in the ambulance, and was taken back to a field dressing station, and then further on, we eventually, I'm sure, I went back to Tripoli, I'm sure.
Now, how bad was it? I mean, was it a proper penetrating chest wound, or was it just more a very bad cut, or had it broken your ribs?
No, I didn't. But there's still a piece of shrapnel in there. It's still in there, you see, the shrapnel. But no, it wasn't very serious, really. I think I was in hospital about a week.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, it did. Yes, it did. Because I was with in the ambulance with a chap called Grundy. I've never forgotten that. And Paul Grundy. Now, he was a jolly good soldier, I thought. He was one of the Lancashire chaps, you see. He was still a private. And Paul Grundy was hit in the arm, and I think he was in great pain, I think, poor Albert. Yes. Now, that's something that's come back to me after 50 years, you see. Albert Grundy. Yes, one of the Lancashire boys, yes. And,
How were you? Carry on, sorry.
So, that's all I remember, really. Yes.
What happened when you got back to Tripoli, then? Did they treat you for it, or did they just patch it up? They didn't try and get the shrapnel out.
No. I patched it up, and they patched it up, and but it was only a small thing, you see. I suppose, in a way, perhaps with, although it did hurt, there's no doubt he felt I think perhaps later on in the campaigns, perhaps I wouldn't even have gone back when the medics became more experienced, you see. But anyway, that's what happened. I finished up in Tripoli. I wore those horrible blue hospital blues, you see, ill-fitting things, and and I rejoined the battalion.
Where were they? Were they in near Tunis or where?
No, they came back to not far from Tripoli, I think, eventually, and I must have rejoined them there and joined the battalion as they were.
Had the being bloodied, if you want to call it, had it made an impact on the battalion?
Well, I think everybody learned a lot, you see.
What sort of lessons do you think?
Well, you see, they were using, they have a slip trenches there, you see, which the Germans had dug, and we used, but they weren't sighted well enough. I didn't think they were well enough sighted because they were in the wrong place. They should have been under the lee of banks, you see. But because they were Germans, the people were using them. I think they learned a great deal, I would imagine.
So they should have dug their own in the perfect position rather than being lazy and used the Germans.
Exactly, you see. Because they were well dug, these German things, you see. You know, that's where they had plenty of time, you see. So
it was a temptation to use them.
Oh, very much so, particularly if we were green, you see.
Any other lessons or just that sort of tip?
Well, I don't... No, I don't think so, really. It's something you can only... you acquire with experience, I think, you see. Once you've been shot at and heard the bullets whizzing past or being shelled or being mortared.
How did you feel about it? I mean, you hadn't had much, I presume, because you'd been wounded so early in the thing. How had you reacted to your first time under proper fire, do you think?
Well, I think I coped to as well as everybody else, you see. I think I coped as well as everybody else. And I'm sure I did, in fact.
Were there any people you saw who didn't cope at that stage, or was it not bad?
Not at that stage. Not at that stage. You see.
So you rejoined the battalion at Tripoli, near Tripoli.
Yes.
And what happened then? You weren't with them much longer, were you?
No. I joined the battalion, and about six of us applied. I don't know why I did, but one or two friends said, come on, let's apply for a commission, you see.
Now, why hadn't you thought of that? Because your background was appropriate, you know.
I don't know, really. I was very happy in the sergeant's mess, quite frankly, with other friends.
What was the sergeant, I've asked you about it, what was the sergeant's mess like in the 2nd 7th?
Well, very good. We had a very good RSM. Again, it's most unusual, but we had a popular RSM named Lockwood, Gary Lockwood, you see, a regular soldier, of course, and he won the DSM, the DCM, sorry, Distinguished Conduct Medal. He had a very good sergeant's mess indeed.
What made it good? What was a good sergeant's mess?
Well, I suppose with the limits of the place, and whatever you can get in the way of drink, of course, to smooth things along.
What was the preferred drink in the mess?
Get a bit bitter. One or two chaps would drink spirits,